Welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. And greetings, folks, from Southport, England. Yes, Rex and I have both touched down at the site of this year's 154th Open Championship. Rex, you and I were already on the golf course on Sunday. Yes, the day before Open Championship week begins. We'll get into what we're expecting from the golf course, what the players are saying in just a little bit. But we did have one of the biggest events on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour literally just wrap up moments ago, courtesy of our friends, Sky Sports, who are always like seeing their coverage, including our friend Radar, who was on the ground. Tom Kim, back in the winner's circle on the PGA Tour for the first time in more than 1,000 days, two-shot victory over Minwoo Lee at the Renaissance Club. What was your biggest takeaway, Rex, from the co-sanctioned event, the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, one of the strongest fields of the year?
Well, first off, it's the story arc that is Tom Kim's career. I mean, there was so much promise. There was so much expectations when he wins twice early in his career in Vegas, both times in Vegas in the same season. Don't make me explain that one. Then he wins at the Wyndham Championship. And then ever since then, it seems like it's been a struggle. Everything hasn't been there. As a matter of fact, he barely kept his tour card last year on the PGA Tour. Up until the Canadian Open, it looked like he was going to lose his tour card this year. He was 98th in the FedEx Cup points after the Canadian Open going into the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. And he had a really strong finish there, probably the best finish he had had in years. And he carried that over till this week. And maybe this is a bit of a surprise, but I will say when you look at his record, not just at this event, but at the Open Championship as well, he plays links course as well. And he seems to love that part of the game. He loves the creativity of it. He has the patience to excel on a golf course like this. But still, I think this is a true breakthrough. And you and I were having a conversation as we were watching the coverage, really looking ahead to the President's Cup. And Tom Kim is the type of player that Jeff Ogilvie, the captain of the international team, is going to have to rely on. It's not just you need him to have a decent President's Cup. You need him to have a great President's Cup to have any chance at all. So that has to be encouraging for him. And Tom Kim, he really couldn't put into words what feels different. He references trying to get better 1% every single day. He talked earlier in the week about the idea he felt like this was coming. He felt like he was close, but the results weren't there until this week. And the one thing that really stood out, and we're going to talk about Scottie Scheffler, is how well he hit his iron play. Second for the week in strokes gain approach. Really blew the field away on that front. And that's going to be key going into this major, Royal Birkdale.
I mean, some of the shots that he hit coming down the stretch, particularly on 16, I think it was a 4-iron, finished that one just 5 or 6 feet past the hole to help put the tournament on ice. That was the Tom Kim that we'd come to know and expect. And I think you bring up a great point about the career arc. And keep in mind, this is a player who might not have won on the PGA Tour in more than 1,000 days. And yet, Rex, he's still just 24 years old. Like, he has so much runway that's still left ahead of him. I think it also shows the sort of form that he's had in his career, that he's capable of winning three times in the PGA Tour at the age of 20 and 21. It is interesting to note, prior to this hot streak and prior to what he had done over the past, I would say, 52 weeks, Tom Kim, if the PGA Tour had its new structure, like, he would have been relegated to the Challenger Series in 2028. He was outside the top 90 in FedEx Cup points a year ago. That's not where Tom Kim belongs. He clearly has proven himself that he is capable. It is interesting to look back. 2022 Scottish Open was sort of his breakout performance. That was when we first really got to know the name, finished third that week. And you look at the leaderboard, Rex, of what transpired in 2026. Tom Kim obviously won the golf tournament. Minwoo Lee won this tournament back in 2021. Matt Fitzpatrick, former playoff loser at this golf tournament. Robert McIntyre, former winner of this golf tournament. Rory McIlroy with a Sunday charge ended up tying for seventh, another player with a great record at Renaissance Club. So it certainly seems like horses for courses, and Tom Kim fits that bill very, very nicely. It's funny you mention the President's Cup as we sit here on July 12th. Tom Kim, by virtue of finishing third in the U.S. Open, was actually 10th in the President's Cup standings prior to this win at the Scottish Open, which should all but make him a lock for that team. I'm not sure what that says about Tom Kim. Not sure what that says about Jeff Ogilvie's bunch in a couple months' time at Medina, that Tom Kim, without doing a whole lot of anything in 2026, was actually 10th on that team.
Again, he was 98th through the Canadian Open. He was struggling. He was going to lose his tour card if he didn't turn something around. That's a really good point. And if Jeff Ogilvy, you probably don't like to hear that part of it. But it is fascinating to see how he has sort of come full circle. And you're right. It's fair to point out he is still so young and still learning. And you wonder throughout the course of this last, let's call it year and a half, season and a half on the PGA Tour, how he was able to come to terms with the idea that the game was probably really easy to him earlier in his career. It had to have been to win that many times before you can actually legally rent a car. I wonder how much he learned about himself over the last year. I wonder if this is an opportunity for him to turn that corner, because he had all the markings of stardom. And you look to your point, horses for courses. This tournament, more so than any other tournament in golf, is the best lead-in and best indicator of possible success at the Open Championship. And it's really not just about links golf. That certainly factors into it. But if you're able to execute those shots on a course like Renaissance Club, like they were, it really carries over. Like I can't really come up with another scenario where momentum can mean as much as this. Rory talked about it after his round.
Yeah, momentum is important. I'm not sure that the two golf courses necessarily. You look at Data Golf's sort of course profile. There's not a huge fit between Renaissance Club and what you're going to be seeing in a couple of days' time at Birkdale. But obviously, getting familiarized with that style of play. They had some pretty nasty weather for at least a couple of days dealing with some wind. We're going to have some wind. It'll be certainly a hotter wind than what they had at the Renaissance Club over the past couple of days. So it's not going to hurt in that respect, to be certain. Rex, what else stood out to you? Rory McIlroy's Sunday 64. It was an interesting weekend for Rory. So Saturday, if you're not paying attention to the coverage, was a really long day. They had about a 3 or 4 hour fog delay at the beginning of the round. So they weren't even going to finish the third round on Saturday to begin with. And then play was eventually suspended when fog rolled in again later on that afternoon. So the leaders ended up having roughly 12 or 13 holes that they needed to clean up on Sunday morning, then going into the final round. But Rory shot a 73 in that third round, one of the worst ball striking performances with his iron play of his entire PGA Tour career. He fatted a wedge on a short par three, just really out of sorts, which spoiled, I thought, was a pretty good performance otherwise, at least as the scores indicated. But to listen to Rory afterward, Rex, it sounded like he has some work to do before the Open Championship starts on Thursday.
And he always goes back to the right to left wind on the range. He's talked about this a couple of times over the course of the season. I think it came up at the Players Championship, and this has been something he's talked about. And every player has a tendency. Certainly, you struggle in the same wind. I've seen you play enough. But every player has a tendency, and I understand that. For him to be cruising like he was, he got off to almost a flawless start and to completely unravel on that first nine of the third round. He was 4 over par. Through nine holes, didn't come close to making a birdie. It was just an ugly nine holes, and he seemed to right the ship a little bit coming down the stretch. But it is concerning when you have a player that's so talented, that's accomplished so much in his career, and that something as simple as the wind's not coming from the right direction on the range. I always find that interesting because it's not something you would hear from a Tiger Woods, or even I'll even point to another player, Ernie Els of that caliber. It's not something that they would even think about. So I'm curious sometimes. What if Rory's mindset is less about blaming it on something maybe that's wrong with his swing and just blaming it on the circumstances is what I question.
I mean, this is a months-long issue that he has now had. I remember him citing it at the Players' Championship. He cited it at Augusta and the Masters. I remember him talking about it at the Truist Championship. He talked about it again at Shinnecock of the U.S. Open. And now here he is, even across the pond, talking about how when he has the into left-right wind, which, again, as a right-hander, is absolute nightmare fuel, because you either hang back and flip it, or if you're me, you hang back and just hit it off the planet. Rory's tendency, he said, is to keep aiming more and more left, and all of a sudden his face is shut and he starts pulling it left, particularly with his irons. I thought it was an actually pretty encouraging week for Rory off the tee, and keep in mind Rory doesn't even have enough rounds to qualify for PGA Tour statistics, but it has not been a great driving year, at least by his very lofty standards. He obviously won the Masters in spite of continually missing the fairway, especially on the par fives, led the field strokes gained off the tee at Renaissance Club. It's going to be important to, again, put that put the ball in play off the tee at Birkdale because of the bunker positioning. And obviously, we're going to be talking about some of the rough that awaits Aaron tee shots as well. So I thought that part was promising, but he certainly needs to clean up the iron play. That was the reason why he eventually finished five shots back of Tom Kim. But with 3 days of prep that he can now get on site, he's already taken a reconnaissance trip to Birkdale a couple of weeks ago where he was interrupted by that practice round by Nick Faldo. I think Rory is actually in a pretty good shape. One player who we certainly have question marks about, Rex, is Scottie Scheffler, who for the first time in 79 events on the PGA Tour missed the cut at the Scottish Open, and it wasn't particularly close. What do you make of where Scottie is heading into his title defense and heading into the year's final major where he's still trying to knock off a Grand Slam event in 2026?
It's twofold. One, it's not just that he missed the cut, because even he sort of filled in the blanks that the way the tour is set up now, you have so many non-cut events. And not to take anything away from Scottie's, what Scottie has accomplished, but all but two of the signature events are non-cut. So I think that is part of this conversation. The bigger part of it is how and why he missed the cut. It's because of his iron play, his ball striking. The one thing that we can always go back to that, yes, that's going to be the staple. Maybe his putting's not quite right. Maybe he's not hitting fairways the way he wants to, but his iron play is always going to be spot on. And according to the PGA Tour stats, he lost 1.78 strokes gain approach, which is staggering when you consider in his last 25 starts on the PGA Tour, he's only lost strokes one other time, and that was Bay Hill last year, not even this year. It's just something he doesn't do. Now, I was talking with a stats guy on the range this morning. He did bring up, if you look at the stats coming from the Scottish Open, this is not the normal suite of stats. You don't have sort of the way they electronically do it with the cameras that are arranged around the green. This is more done by volunteers actually putting in information. And they can do it well from the fairway. So strokes gain off the tee is usually pretty close to what you would find in the United States. But the guy around the green is just kind of estimating. And maybe it's 12 feet. You mentioned, I think there was a putt that Tom Kim had earlier. They said it was a little under 4 feet. You and I both looked at each other like, that's got to be at least 6 feet. So strokes gain approach stats are a little bit off. And I don't think that Scotty lost quite that much, but I'm sure he did lose some shots. And coming in to the season's last championship, major championship, coming into the Open Championship, where, of course, he's had so much success, there is a level of concern. Not that I don't think he's going to make the cut, not that I don't think he's going to contend, but we've spent all season sort of kicking the can when it came to Scottie Scheffler. The idea that he'll figure it out, that there's no way that a player of that caliber, a player that's accomplished everything that he has done over the course of his career, can continue to slide down this slope. And he was always close. There was always some sort of silver lining that you could point to and go, four runner-up finishes. He hasn't finished outside the top 25. He hasn't missed a cut in however many years. This one, I think you have to put up some sort of alarm bells. You have to put a critical eye, and we'll talk about this more on Wednesday in the preview podcast, but I'm not quite sure if I make him the favorite going into this week.
I mean, there were so many well actuallys that were going around on social media on Friday as it relates to the 78 in a row made cuts for Scottie Scheffler on the PGA Tour. It's the first time he'd missed the cut since 2022. You look at the no-cut events and sort of the changing landscape of the PGA Tour. I think people tend to forget, though, Rex, like, yes, it was 78 PGA Tour cuts in a row, and a made cut might not mean as much as it did when Tiger was putting up his streak, incredibly, of 142. However, Scottie Scheffler did produce 32 consecutive top 25 finishes on the PGA Tour. So it wasn't just that he was making the cut over and over again, is that what he was consistently putting himself in the mix. I was very surprised by this just because of what I'd seen with my own two eyes at the Travelers Championship, where that was his best iron performance of the season, was really dialed in with his numbers. I thought he made some strides in that department, particularly since he looked a little bit off the week prior at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, where any sort of miss was magnified in a significant way. I don't read too much into it. And I think if you were, this is probably going to sound like I'm being a Scotty apologist, if you were going to miss a cut, I think this would probably be the cut that you would want to miss. The reason why I say that is that most players, yes, it's a National Open and you want to win it, and it comes with a whole lot of perks, including invitations to the Masters and the Open Championship for those who are not already included. But most players, Rex, are teeing it up just to get familiarized with links golf again, and to get acclimated to the time zone, acclimated to the turf and the slower greens, and just sort of getting used to the way of life over here. So for Scottie Scheffler to come over here, gets his practice rounds in, gets the two rounds of competitive golf, he headed over to Birkdale, on Saturday. You and I saw him out on the golf course on Sunday, getting in at least 9 holes of practice. I don't think that was the worst thing for Scotty, where he knocked off some Lynx golf reps, and now he heads into the open venue, a golf course he has never seen before, to get at least a little bit more practice. Obviously, I think two things can be true at once. One, he is a little bit off this season. I think that is inarguable at this point. That's why we're sitting here on July 12th, and he only has one victory on the PGA Tour this season. It came in the American Express. He has kicked away a number of opportunities. I think he could easily be sitting there with 3 or 4 wins on the PGA Tour. I'm thinking most importantly about the RBC Heritage, which he lost in the playoff to Matt Fitzpatrick. And even last week, or excuse me, 2 weeks ago at the Travelers Championship, we lost to Victor Hovland, had a great opportunity the last 4 or 5 holes and was unable to hold that one. So yes, Scottie Scheffler is a little bit off this season. But I also think, Rex, he is by far and away still the best player in the world. He's better than Rory. He's better than Jon Rahm. He's certainly better than Bryson. He's better than Matt Fitzpatrick. He's better than Cameron Young. By any measure, statistically, Scottie Scheffler is still playing the best golf in the world, and yet he's still not playing to the standard that we've grown accustomed to seeing from 2022 to 2025.
You were tiptoeing down that fence right now. You didn't want to go on either side of that fence. I appreciate what you were able to do there. And I guess
I think it's a nuanced discussion. I don't think you could just say like he's peaked. And the best we've seen of Scotty is in years past.
Absolutely not. I think what we're in the same trap that we've been all season long, where you're trying to come up with a reason. You're trying to quantify why this generational player that's been able to do so many things, like generationally good ball striking stats, somehow gets to an event like last week. And I will point out, if he had struggled on Lynx turf before, and that's one of the big deals about players coming over. We'll talk about this a lot this week. The idea that it's just not playing the ball in the wind. It's just not playing the ball closer to the ground, which, of course, you have to do on Lynx golf. It's getting a feel for how the golf ball comes off the turf, because it's completely different than anywhere else you play in the world. If he had struggled with that in the past, I would have acknowledged, okay, maybe that factors into it, especially coming off the Travelers Championship, as you pointed out, where he had great ball striking numbers. That's not the case. He's won the Open Championship. He's played well at the Scottish Open before. This really came out of nowhere. And it's easy, I think, by and large, on Sunday nights for you and I to sit here and have this conversation when he finishes second again or fourth again. And he's just slightly off. And you're right. Something is just slightly off. This one did feel a little bit more jarring. You're right. I'm not sending up alarm bells. I'm not sitting here saying that the reign of Scottie Scheffler is over. That would be ridiculous. That's not the point at all. What I'm pointing out is, this one is concerning because of how it happened, not that it happened. Had he struggled with his putting or off the tee or just had one bad round, if he had one bad 9 holes, like we just talked about Rory having, that would have been something that, okay, that you can, you know, write that off. This was systemic over 36 holes. I think that's why it's concerning.
And if there's any golf course and any sort of test that is going to emphasize and underscore the things that Scottie Scheffler does well, which are trajectory control, spin control, lag putting, ball placement, like Birkdale and the test that we're going to see, Brown and Bouncy, that certainly would be right up his alley. A couple other news and notes from the Scottish that I wanted to touch on. Important week record for Johnny Kiefer, who is the Korn Ferry Tour Player of the Year rookie this season on the PGA Tour. Has not played up to his standards, I think he would be the first to admit. Ended up tying for third on Sunday, gets him into the Open, earns some much-needed points to help ensure that he'll be around on the PGA Tour in 2027. Also wanted to point out Chris Goddard, the defending champion, the Scottish Open, didn't have the Sunday that he would want, shot 71, the same score as Wyndham Clark, but both those two players continued to play well throughout the summer, have to like both of their chances this week at the Open Championship as well. Jon Rahm looked like he was going to blow out of town early, ends up rallying with a 65 on Friday, ends up tying for 38th in what was another disappointing week in a non-live event for Jon Rahm. And Brooks Koepka goes the dreaded 66-74 to miss the cut. Not sure what to make of that one, but I did see Big Bad Brooks out on the golf course with his swing coach Pete Cowan trying to get things right on Sunday. Any other news or notes as it relates to the Scottish before we move on to what to expect this week?
And to put a bow on it, just to finish up the conversation that you and I had a lot over the course of the week, because we were up in studio co-hosting Golf Today together, and the importance of this event in the PGA Tour landscape, as well as the DP World tour landscape and where it may end up landing in 2028 and beyond. And there is no easy answer. That's the conclusion I think that all of us come to, that yes, of course, it should be a tier one event. Yes, of course, it should be in the championship series. But that creates a whole nother set of problems. It's co-sanctioned. You would need to find a way to make it exclusively a PGA Tour field. And certainly the European Tour doesn't have any interest in that. Dropping it to a tier two event also doesn't necessarily work because now you're not even getting the top players like you need. And then the third option, which everyone seems to cling on to, is move it to the fall. When the PGA Tour and Brian Rolapp, the CEO, are talking about creating these national opens, doing like a run of the Irish Open, the Spanish Open, the Australian Open, whatever the case may be. That sounds great. There's a reason why the Scottish Open has turned into such a must-play event. It's because it's the week before the Open Championship. All the reasons that we've sat and talked about it before. So none of those three options work, but I would point to look at the leaderboard and look at what it produces year in and year out. Chris Gutterup, who is playing the best golf of anyone probably right now on the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy, right in the mix. Bobby McIntyre, who from Scotland, this is a major championship to him. Just keep going down the leaderboard and you can identify why this is such an important event. And it is very much going to be in jeopardy. And I still can't think of any answer. So if anyone has any ideas, please, you're really good about reaching out to us. I'd love to find a solution for this.
I've got a solution because I don't like any of those options. The reason why I don't like any of those options are, one, you can't just have a hostile takeover of the PGA Tour, just taking the Scottish Open and putting it into a chokehold and stiff-arming the DP World Tour and say, no, this is our event now. It obviously can't drop down to a Challenger Series event because the players in Tier 1 wouldn't be able to go play that golf tournament. You can't move it to the fall because I think sort of the mass appeal among the players outside of it being a really important national open is that it serves as the perfect lead-in and perfect preparation for the year's final major at the Open. I think the solution, Rex, is that if you're the PGA Tour and you're trying to map out a championship series for 2028, you should build in an off week heading into the Open Championship. At that point, you would then have a DP World Tour event, a Rolex Series event, as it currently is and as it was before it became co-sanctioned a couple years ago with the PGA Tour. All of a sudden, you hand out sponsor exemptions to the players who would want to come across the pond. It's going to be a number of sponsor exemptions. You might have to alter that field a bit as well or sort of tweak some of the qualification categories, exemption categories. You could get the field that you want while having it primarily, almost exclusively, a DP World Tour event on the schedule and not a part of the championship series. And it still would be a typical Rolex Series event, which would garner a $7, $8 million purse.
No, I don't think that's the way it would play out. Right now in 2028, going forward with this particular schedule, if you look at the parameters of what people on the inside are telling me, they don't want to play more than 3 weeks in a row. We're talking about the championship series event. You either want to have the week off or the week before a major championship off one way or the other, which roughly leaves, depending on the calendar, they change from year to year, but about 7 weeks that you would have off over the course of an entire season. Yes, you could make one of those, what we're talking about right now, the week before the Open Championship and try to slot that in there. And you would probably end up getting Rory McIlroy, the players who want to be loyal to the DP World Tour, Shane Lowry, Matt Fitzpatrick. I don't think you would get the Americans. You're already banking on the idea that a Scottie Scheffler is going to play 3 weeks in a row, take a week off, 3 weeks in a row, take a week off for the entirety of this very condensed schedule. I don't see it happening that way.
I'm not a betting man, but if I were, I would bet a lot of money that there's going to be an off week leading into the Open Championship. You can't
That's have fine. And it can be. You can absolutely have that as an off week. But if you're going to make it a DP World Tour event, please, I know you're not a betting man, but don't bet on the Americans coming over and play.
They could also skip a championship series event if they would determine that playing the Scottish
that defeats
again on this golf course is a better prep than playing, I don't know, the Canadian Open, let's say, leading into that spot or wherever, or one of these new markets that they might be building in the PGA Tour schedule. They could skip that tournament if they really believe it is more beneficial to my chances at the Open by playing back-to-back weeks, DP World Tour and the Open Championship. I think that's like the only scenario that I could see.
And it's not a bad scenario. I think the fallacy in the logic is the idea that the Americans who keep arguing for more and more off weeks in this particular condensed schedule would somehow add something that's not required. I just don't see them doing that. They're already going to be asked to do so much. They're going to be asked to play these condensed schedule three weeks in a row. You know the top players don't like to do that. Now you're asking them to not only ad event, but essentially you're going to turn this into a 7-week stretch, consecutive weeks. Because if you're only building in one off week, you're already three on, three, one off, three on. So you're asking the top players to play 7 weeks in a row. I don't see how that happens.
Yeah, the future of the Scottish Open could look a lot like the past of the Scottish Open before it became a co-sanctioned event where it was very light on American participation, but was still one of the marquee events on the DP World Tour schedule. It would certainly be a shame if that were the case. Hopefully, some people that are smarter than you and I can get into a room and make a schedule that makes sense, because this, I believe, is a really important part of the schedule, not just because of it leading in to an Open Championship. It's also going to be condensed in 2028. You have the Olympics. The British Open is going to be pushed back a couple weeks. The playoffs as well, leading into a cup event that year. Also wanted to give a shout out, since I didn't earlier, to Matt Fitzpatrick. You and I were cheering him on, wanting to see Rex, a player, the first Englishman ever to win four times on the PGA Tour. That was what Matt Fitzpatrick was trying to do on Sunday at the Genesis Scottish Open. Instead, probably rued a couple of chances on his back nine. Had some good looks inside 15 feet, could have put some more pressure on Tom Kim. Instead, he will settle for a tie for third. Certainly looked frustrated. Maybe some more motivation as he tries to become the first Englishman to win the Open in 60 years. Speaking of the Open, that's where you and I are. This was 27 minutes to get to this point, right? But you and I were on the golf course. It is hot. You can probably hear the blinds that are rattling in my background here. You are in your bedroom. We should point out that there's already been a lot of kvetching. There's already been a lot of hand-wringing, not just among media members, but also PGA Tour players as well. In Southport, England, there must be a shortage of homes that have air conditioning. There certainly is a shortage in the grocery stores of places that have fans. This is very similar, right? So you and I both live in Florida. The scenario when there's a hurricane coming into town, water's gone, canned foods are gone, paper products are gone. Toiletries are on the shelves. I mean, this is a heat wave. We've been receiving advisories for a week leading into this. It is as hot as advertised here in England.
And here's where we both got thrown. Behind your shoulder, I believe it's your left shoulder, is a thermostat that's on the wall, and it reads, I think, 23 degrees Celsius, which I can't do the math. I think that's in the upper 70s.
Try 26.
Around there. Okay, so that's even higher than I thought. You and I both thought this was a thermostat. We're trying to figure out how to turn it down. We can't turn it down. I really took a hard look around. There's nowhere for the cold air to come out. I think that's just it's a very cruel joke to have that on the wall, because there is no AC in this house.
26 is 78 degrees Fahrenheit. It is going to be a very uncomfortable sleep. But yes, so you and I are going to be toughing it out in some very difficult conditions this week. The players, however, are going to be encountering a golf course that I walked all 18 holes today, is brown, it's bouncy, it's firm, it's almost a little crispy and crunchy in some parts of the golf course as well. And obviously the greens are still slow, because they're always slow over here. But man, when I was walking around on Sunday, it was about 81 degrees. It was 15 to 20 mile an hour. So you're talking about a club and a half wind on a really firm golf course where there's a pretty steep penalty for missing in spots, either because of the runoffs around the greens or the pop bunkers that are waiting to swallow up some tee shots. You also have some longer, thicker fescue awaiting some holes off the fairway. This is going to be presenting a very difficult test if the conditions are maintained, which again, you and I are anticipating they are with the forecast that we have.
Forecast doesn't call for much rain, if at all. I think a little bit over the course of the weekend. It's going to be hot, maybe cool off a little bit. But I would argue the golf course is perfect. I love it when links courses play like this. I remember covering the 2008 Open Championship that Tiger Woods won, of course. And he did it with just a brilliant performance with his irons. I think he hit one driver off a tee all week long. And I would argue it's one of his most brilliant performances, because he really had to stand up on every tee and think his way around that golf course. Now, I don't know if that's what it's going to require this week. Birkdale is a little bit different test than what you end up with at Royal Liverpool. But I do think a lot of players walking up and down the range today, every single one of them was testing a two iron at some point. You pointed out how well that both Rory and Scottie Scheffler drove the ball last week. I don't think it's going to be that big of a weapon. Not that there's that much damage. You can't do much damage hitting it off the fairway. The rough is really thin. It's wispy. You can certainly play out of it. But this is going to be much more about position.
I love what you just said. That, of course, Tiger Woods won the 2008 Open. Nope. Of course, Tiger Woods did not win that one. That was the 2006 Open at Royal Liverpool. I know how much.
Thank you.
Oh, folks, we are both jet lagged, although Rex has been in the country for a couple of days at this point. I love the test. And I was talking to a couple of players, like we couldn't remember the last time we really had a brown, firm, baked out Open. Carnoustie came to mind back in 2018. Muirfield came to mind back in 2013. Other than that, it seems like the last couple of years, Rex, have been a little bit rainy, a little bit soft, a little bit greener. If you've ever played Lynx golf before, this is what you would actually prefer because you can get a lot of scoot in the fairways. Yeah. It opens up a variety of different skills. It's not going to be a one-dimensional test at all. So, again, the forecast is calling for 80-degree weather. That's Fahrenheit. 80-degree weather at least through Friday. You might get a little bit of rain, but I don't think it's anything that's going to be dampening this golf course. And so with that in mind, Rex, and sort of the conditions, what we're seeing from the golf course right now, in my opinion, that really opens up the field to even more players, but it really puts a also premium on ball striking and really controlling your numbers, hitting your numbers, and judging the balance, which obviously the best ball strikers can do.
Yeah, Port Rush, to your point last year, was very green and lush. So you compare the two, it's a vastly different kind of test. Now, there will be wind. There was quite a bit of wind on the golf course today, and that's going to be where the challenge is. The other half of the challenge is, I was speaking with Jason Day this afternoon about it, you can stand on every tee and Bass driver. And as I said, the rough is pretty wispy, and if you're going to probably end up with a better lie, chances are, than not. What's going to happen, and he pointed this out, like, you don't know how far it's going to go. You could catch a gust, you can keep it on the ground, and it's going to hit a mound or a hill. And a drive that you think is going to go 310 suddenly scoots out 330, 340 into a ridiculous bunker that you never even thought about. So those are sort of the unique challenges when the Lynx test is playing like this. It's also worth pointing out, this golf course is vastly different than the one that Jordan Spieth won on back in 2017. Now, they've changed a lot of holes. It's a completely different range, so he won't be able to airmail one onto the range like he did back in 2017 during that final round. So for a lot of players who showed up today, I was pretty surprised how many players were actually on the golf course today. It's all about learning, not an entirely new golf course, but close.
I think you're going to see some really fun shots this week. I think you're going to see four irons that go 300 yards, and I think you're also going to see five irons that go probably a buck 65, just depending on the wind, depending on the shot shape, depending on what sort of shot value you want to put on it. A couple of players mentioned too, Rex, that it's not evenly brown throughout the golf course, and so you can hit a tee shot and it can hit one of those really baked out brown spots and ricochet forward, or you can hit one of these softer green spots and it could get potentially killed there. So, yes, it's going to be very important to hit your numbers and to shape it into the wind to hold those shots. You also sort of have to get a little bit fortunate in judging the bounce as well, because that's going to be a huge talking point, I think, this week, as well as the 15th, which a couple of players told me is an absolute abomination. You're going to see potentially three woods or drivers on a par three. It sticks out like a sore thumb. The 15th hole, it's about a 280 yard par three from the back tee. You will hear a lot of talk about that on live from over the next couple of days. I was struck, Rex, not by how many players were out there, but how many fans were out there on Sunday. So the RNA has begun selling passes, tickets to the Sunday before the Open. I mean, there was thousands of fans who were streaming through the gates. Always great to catch up with some of our friends. Shout out to Scott. Hugh and I both got to see out on the golf course on Sunday. Something new, something fun also is happening on Monday at Birkdale. It's called the Last Chance Qualifier. We already saw the tee markers and a lot of signage up for that. It's 12 players. It's one spot, 18 holes, essentially the ultimate Monday qualifier to earn the final spot in the Open Championship. Aldrich Potgieter, the big hitter, and YouTuber Wesley Bryan among those who are in the field of 12. Anything else, Rex, before we get out of here ahead of the preview show that we'll have on Wednesday live from Birkdale?
No, I can't wait to get a handle on the golf course to go out and see exactly what players are saying about it. It was pretty fresh. I had a chance to talk with Jordan Spieth and Jason Day today. But as I said, it's almost a completely different golf course. And so it'll be fun hearing players how they're going to play it. I love walking onto the range when the golf course is playing like this and seeing how many guys are testing out two irons or one iron, something ridiculous that you're never going to see at any other tournament over the course of the year. It's a fun week.
It is a fun week. Probably my most fun, most favorite week of the entire golf calendar. Outside of a Ryder Cup week, which is also fun in different respects. You and I will have a Wednesday preview edition. You and I will be on the live from the Open Championship desk and range on Monday, a three-hour show. I think in our broadcast, we have Jordan Spieth, Wyndham Clark, Matt Fitzpatrick, who are going to be speaking as well. All the big hitters, the Scotties, the Rorys, the Roms, I believe, are scheduled to talk on Tuesday. So we'll have plenty to chew over the next couple of days. We'll also have another edition of the Live From Newsletter with Rex and Lab that'll be dropping in inboxes on Thursday, on Saturday, and the recap edition on Monday. If you have not already signed up, go to golfchannel.com/Rex and Lab to make sure you get that. It's news, insights, and opinions that you can only get there. In the meantime, it's going to be a great run-up to the Open Championship. Make sure you go to golfchannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will be on at 9 a.m. Eastern time on Monday. Hope to see you then.